Welcome to Birthful. I'm Adriana Lozada.
Anytime you engage with a system, can you look and analyze that system and demand that system to treat you like a whole, full human being?
That's midwife and researcher Dr. Mimi Niles. Her work seeks to improve the perinatal experience for all people and focuses on addressing the complex systemic issues in perinatal care. We're going to be talking today about the realities of giving birth in the U.S. hospital system, how your goals as a birthing person might be at odds with the goals of this system, and why you need to know this. You're listening to Birthful, helping you inform your intuition. Why don't you start out by telling us a little bit about yourself and also how you identify?
Sure. So I'm Mimi Niles. My pronouns are she and her. And I identify as a midwife. I identify as a mother doing mothering and parenting work, as an immigrant brown woman. That's the body that I live in. And as an engaged Buddhist, which is trying to bring my spiritual practice and my social justice practice in conversation with each other.
I'm fascinated by that because, especially how it ties us to our conversation. But first, say I am a pregnant person giving birth at a hospital. What do I need to understand about how that system works and how I fit into that system?
I'm a researcher as well, which is sort of a new identity. And that's one of my, I feel, guiding research questions is trying to understand this system, right? Although I will say it's not a monolithic system. So it really is dependent on your location and your geography and your state down to the very granular of your town or village or city. And then even within that city, I happen to be in New York City, which has the largest public healthcare network in the country. So it really depends on what system you're seeking out your care in. But in the U.S., that's actually one of the problems and challenges of the U.S. is that you cannot speak about a system because there's multiple systems happening at the same time and they're functioning in either for-profit models or public models or hybrid models. So I don't have an easy answer for that. But I think it is worth people or users investigating what systems they have access to and what services are offered in those systems and how their insurance impacts very clearly what choices they have and what they have access to, particularly in perinatal care or maternity care.
So you brought up a great point about insurance companies and the insurance system, which when you're thinking, I'm going to go give birth in a hospital, you're probably not thinking about how the way insurance works with the hospital specifically or with the care provider specifically, how that ties in to the care you will receive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunately a fee-for-service model. It's an incentivized system. It incentivizes volume over quality. And that is sort of the basic tension of maternity care in the U.S., particularly around midwifery care, because the midwifery model of care is about intervening less. It's about supporting a physiologic process. It's about supporting the whole change over time, right? Which is what, to me, pregnancy is and labor is and birth is and parenting is. It's really change over time. And so models of payment are not structured for sort of the long-term gains of a particular care model. They're really structured around you do a service, you get a fee. And that incentivizes intervention. It incentivizes a more sort of what we call a technocratic model of care, where the technology is what's driving the care, the intervention is what's driving the care. And that, as we're seeing, does not work in maternity care because in essence, it's a physiologic process that really needs protection, guidance, a safe space. It doesn't mean that complications cannot arise. They do, either in the prenatal period or in labor or postpartum. And that's when you do need specialist, or you need intervention, or you need somebody with a skill set, right? Sort of a technician who can help you address that. But that is not the case for most people.
So what would be a model of payment that is more structured around supporting the long-term changeover time process that you mentioned?
I work in a system where the midwives in the practice, and we're a public practice, we're not privately paid, we don't get paid per birth, I get a salary. So some people call that the laborist model. So basically, you go in, you do your hours, you get paid for the work you do. And there are some studies to show that actually the quality improves in that type of model, because the provider is not engaging directly with trying to, you know, build their bottom line. Basically, they're coming in and doing good work for 12 hours or 18 hours, and then they go home and they get their paycheck. So in my practice, for example, all the 90% of the vaginal births are with midwives. So the risk condition doesn't matter. You could have preeclampsia, you could have gestational diabetes, you could have both, you could have three things, four things. You're still, if it's a vaginal birth, it's going to be at the hands of a midwife. So I really am trying to also get the midwifery world and the clinical world and the health services world to think about midwifery care as more expansive, because we've always been sort of pigeoned into this low risk model. And I think that has a lot to do with sort of the hierarchies of care and how care is structured. But midwives can actually do good birth no matter what the circumstance is, because birth is a process for anyone. And so it's really about who's there to contain and support and to guide that process. And can insurers and hospital systems realize that this is what the client values versus what the system values, which is something very, very different, right? The system values efficiency and the system values bottom lines. And
well, and I think that's a great point in that there are two different focuses, right? Like as a person giving birth, you are focused on the compassionate, equitable, dignified care that you mentioned, and also person-centered. And I would think when I envision my utopia of care, it would even be person-led care. Mm-hmm. But how that is so at odds with what the hospital system that you are stepping into to give birth has as their priorities. And we have lots of ways to measure whether an intervention is quote-unquote needed or was done well or, you know, did its purpose, but we don't have things embedded into the system that measure whether the person is feeling seen, whether they're feeling heard, whether there's trust. So I want to jump ahead and say, how do we change that? Because we know like that's something that a person is going to experience when they go in.
Yeah, I mean, that is also the million-dollar question, because I think it goes way, way back, and it goes into how these institutions were designed and erected and what the purpose of those institutions was. And I think we're in a moment of deep, deep rupture and reckoning in the U.S., and you cannot and should not be given a microphone about maternity care in the U.S. and not talk about the absolute disrespect that has been laid to bear on Black women, Indigenous women, women of color, immigrant women, refugee women. What we're seeing right now is, you know, the news reports of forced sterilization. I mean, this is not new for those of us who have been in the work. This has been happening since the birth of this country, since the colonization of this country. A woman's womb has been a commodity. It's a place to make money. It's a place to produce workers. It's a place to increase your investment, grow your wealth. Or it's been a place of control, right? It's a place for people to say, you're having too many babies. We're going to tie your tubes and we're not going to tell you about it because you're burdening our system. The more I learn, the more I think these systems are actually built to keep people out, to keep people shut out of places of power, places of control. You know, for example, in midwifery, only 2% of midwives identify as midwives of color. That is not reflective of who we are as a country. Of OBs, I think it's something like 8% of OBs identify as Black. So I think it's more than just the episode of care. It's all the pipelines that come into care: insurance, public health infrastructure, the workforce pipeline, the nursing education, medical education. It is just an absolute maze of what has been created to exclude people. And now we're at a point where, particularly public health systems, because that's my interest, where the predominant people who are going into that care are marginalized and minoritized people. And we're trying to use the same systems that were used to exclude them. And so what ends up happening is people come out of that system broken and hurt and harmed. And then we scratch our heads and we wonder why, you know? So I'm particularly interested in, and this is like, I'm just being unapologetic here, but the full-on integration of midwifery care into maternity care systems, because they're not accessible in the U.S. We represent about 10 to 12% of all births in the United States. Is Medicaid paying for it? Are insurers paying for it? For the most part, back to that insurance question, no, they're not paying for home birth at the same rate. So the home birth midwives are fighting to get, they do a birth and they have to fight to get paid for that birth, you know, or they have inequitable Medicaid reimbursement. So they're disincentivized from taking on clients who have Medicaid because Medicaid pays so little that there's no way to run a business and take Medicaid only, you know, clients.
Have your hospital classes been canceled? Are you simply tired of conflicting advice from well-meaning family and friends? Monarch Parents is proud to provide continuous education, guidance, and support for planning, expecting, and new parents. Monarch's virtual service pairs you with your very own Monarch mentor from their team of doulas, educators, and lactation experts. Cut through the noise of internet search engines and fear-based opinions. And they provide you evidence-based, holistic guidance. Subscribers meet their mentor regularly in private video sessions covering everything from prenatal nutrition, labor prep, informed choice, and breastfeeding to tips for stress management, pregnancy comfort, and long-term well-being. Group classes and personalized guidance help you traverse your journey with less stress, and regular check-ins by text and email assure you that an experienced, non-judgmental professional is in your corner and ready to help whenever and from wherever you need it. Use the code BIRTHFUL at monarchparents.com to get your first month free. At every point of the discussion that we're having, at every point we find barriers of access. Barriers of access determined by the system, determined by the power plays, determined by the hierarchy within the system. And I also want to talk about that because I definitely know the power of midwives and how the midwifery model of care compared to a technocratic model of care makes a huge difference in these outcomes of feeling you have a better experience, not just that at the moment that you left the hospital, you and your baby were healthy. But what I think doesn't get talked about as much is also all the other players and how they structure and how that hierarchy, that power system that you talked about gets perpetuated for the people and violently so for the people that are in the system trying to provide care. And so we have, you know, OBs and midwives and nurses and then the nurse manager and the administration. And then in terms of the doctors themselves, you have residents and whether they're first year or second year or third year or they're fellow of their students. Like that's a lot of, can you untangle that web a little bit for us?
I can try. I've been in clinical practice for going on 16 years, and I'm still trying to figure it out. but residents are basically physicians in training, right? They finish medical school. They're going for their, I would call it almost an apprenticeship. That's how midwives are also trained. We're trained in a very apprentice model. We sort of shadow a midwife and we do everything that they do. And that's, you learn by doing. And I think the way that power is organized in healthcare is pretty clear. I'm just going to say it, but it's the physician is on top and everybody else is on the bottom. So I wouldn't even call it a pyramid. It's sort of like maybe it's a pyramid, but on the top are the MDs. They make the decisions. They're also on the top of, they're the insurance company CEOs, and they're the managed care plan CEOs, and they're the, you know, so it's not just hospitals. You know, it's not some person sitting in the corner office. It's every decision that's made, the who gets licensed in the system and who works in the system and who gets credentialed and who gets hired as the administrators in the system. And in some ways, there's the justification is, well, we have the training and we have the knowledge, and this is the work that this is our space where we do the work. But it's not, because, like, for example, when I think of obstetrics, and I really, when people say I work in obstetrics, I say I don't work in obstetrics. I work in midwifery, or I work in maternity, right? Obstetrics is designed to, as it should be, is a surgical technocratic specialty. They are surgeons. That's what they are, right?
And that's the knowledge they have. They have the knowledge of surgery.
Yes.
We want it.
We need it, you know.
When we need it, right? Yeah. When we need it, we're so happy that they're there to provide that. When things get pathologized or pathology shows up, then you need them. But we know that in birth, that's not usually the norm. Birth is not pathologized. And so when you say about, like, them holding the knowledge, and so they're, it's clinician-centered because they hold the knowledge. Well, they hold the knowledge to a very specific thing that we are prioritizing, but is in fact in dire opposition of what birth needs, which is bringing it back to that mindfulness that you so center, because it's, you need oxytocin to flow. And for oxytocin to flow, you need to not feel fear. You need to be safe, protected, loved, treated with respect, seen, you know, treated with dignity, all these things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I have physician collaborators, and that's how it should be. And I want to go back to that idea of, can other forms of knowledge be honored and respected in this space? Right now, I feel like it's very hard for the medical model to consider and regard and welcome, because that would be the ultimate, to welcome in other forms of knowledge, right? Because midwifery is an ancient tradition and practice that has been central to every community since we were human communities. It has lost its way because of power and because of politics and because of capitalism. It has so lost its way in the United States. And we are driven. Capitalism is what drives this country. You know, if you cannot see that now, then I don't know when you're going to see that. Like, you can pay for the best kind of care that you want to have. But what about the people who have public insurance or regular insurance, who are working people like me, who I can't afford an $8,000 out-of-pocket cost right now, you know? And so I think, again, so many systems were designed to consolidate power. And if knowledge is power, then you also try to consolidate what knowledge means. And the knowledge I bring as a practicing midwife who's done hundreds and hundreds of births, when I just know that everything's okay, even though the tracing might be off or the contractions aren't strong enough, but I know because there's so many changes, micro changes I'm watching and observing in this person I'm taking care of, that I know that their body is transitioning. You know, I can't prove it to you on the monitor, but I know because I've had so much lived, embodied experience. But it doesn't count for anything, because where do I put that in the chart? Where do I put that in the medical record?
The mortality rate is horrible all across the board. I think the U.S. right now ranks as 54 for high resource countries. And then if you are a Black person, then you have higher risk of dying from giving labor. So we are spending almost as much, twice as much money as anybody else in our healthcare system, in our perinatal systems, and we're having some of the worst outcomes. So just unpacking, like, what does that really mean?
And it's not even just maternal mortality. It's what's even worse, or the underbelly of it, is maternal morbidity, which means severe illness in pregnancy, in the labor process, in the birth process, in the postpartum process, something sometimes people call near misses or near deaths, which is just like a chilling term that people who are sort of at the brink of dying and then brought back. So those numbers are even worse. And I'm hoping that, you know, those of us who are in the work in a different way, maybe in a more academic or clinical way, we're really also starting to think about morbidity, the severe morbidity crisis is, you know, that means like severe hemorrhage or eclampsia or things that we have the tools and the resources and the technology to avert those things. And we're still doing worse than other countries on, you know, in terms mm-hmm. of those markers. And to me, it's also the deeper spiritual root of that is what is the collective consciousness and commitment of this country to families, to parents, to mothers, to women. I don't see that there is a deep collective commitment to that, even though that is the building block of any community. That is the building block. A family is, to me, square one, piece one of a building block of how do you create and grow and sustain healthy communities.
Well, and we know that however a person is born into parenthood, that dictates, sets the tone of how they will parent. What happens during the birth sets the tone of how you will parent. And it sets the tone of how that little person, that baby, will grow up. Your postpartum experience is going to be very, very impacted by how you birth, and how you birth is going to be impacted of how you're taken care of during pregnancy and so forth. And we can go all the way back. But back to the system.
Yeah, sorry. I totally went off on a tangent here.
Me too. Back to the system.
And power. I want to talk about power. I challenge my students to, and the collaborators to, view all of these issues and challenges and tensions through a power lens that was shaped for me by Black feminist thinkers, Chicana thinkers, Indian feminist thinkers, that, you know, their lives were dictated by so much more clearly by power structures and power systems, because they were so excluded from them that they could see them more clearly. When you're in it, you can't really see it, you know? And I don't believe institutions have souls. So they're not really going to care for you. They're not going to love you. They're not going to protect you. They're not going to, I mean, they have mandates to do no harm. But to me, that's like the bare minimum of what somebody can do is not harm you. And I think the healthcare experience has to be about, it has to be way beyond not harm you. To me, it has to be, we will enhance you. We will make you more whole. We will try. We will not break you more, you know?
We all want our kids to be clean, but it's not always easy. Enter Splash Pad. This line of cleverly designed, water-absorbent mats keeps your sink splash-free. They're washable, reusable, and waterproof, and allow for mess-free sink use when bathing newborns and for growing kids learning to brush their teeth and wash their hands. Created by a mom, the patented sink mats are high-quality, super-functional, simple to use, and not bulky. You can leave them on for a few days, and at the end of the week, throw them in the wash with the rest of your towels. You just snap it on to custom fit your sink once, and you're done. Splash Pad offers several adorable, kid-friendly prints and modern solid colors. They are great as a baby shower and holiday gift. Buy now and get 10% off on Amazon at amazon.com/splashpad. We're all, I think we're waking up, we're naming the thing, and we're trying to figure out how to reinvent the system. But while we wait for that to happen, for that pregnant person that I mentioned at the beginning that is walking into a hospital to give birth, what are some things they can do to balance out the power towards themselves a little bit? Like, how do they do that work?
I struggle with this question a lot because I feel like we have to demand more of the system. Like, that's number one, right? In some ways, I feel like it's unfair to ask a solitary person to be their only advocate, or a person and their doula, or a person and their partner, or the person and their grandma, whoever that might be, to take on this sort of massive system and say, you figure it out and you advocate for yourself. But I do think that there, if the system's going to treat us like a customer, then we should act like a consumer, right? And so that means doing the research, finding out what's available in your community. Know that if you choose care and you have an option to choose midwifery care and it's supported by your insurer, and if it's not, you know, that again is a whole other sort of conversation that you could have with your insurer and say, I want this and I demand this of my care. And I know that this is cost savings. And here's the research on how much midwifery care is going to save your company in costs. Because we know that the midwifery care is relationally based. So it's a relationship centered model of care. So the care itself is rooted on building the trust between you and the midwife or the midwives, depending on what that practice looks like. And that's something we call continuity of care in the jargon, is sort of you have this person that over time, because pregnancy is a process, you have this person that you're building this relationship with over time, so that they get to learn not just what you tell them, but, you know, just what you bring to your care. Because again, that's going to change on every visit, what you're going through, who's important to you, what values you realize about yourself. The trust builds, that's really important. Your sense of autonomy will build, where you feel like, because your provider trusts you, you're going to feel like, oh, I can tell them what it is that I really want for myself, or what I hope for myself in this experience.
And I think it's really important for them to be clear, to take a step back and be clear on what it is they want for themselves, and what even more of what they want, what they need. And so, for example, and this is something I work with my doula clients so much on, is do the work of examining where you're at, because that's what you're bringing into your birth. And then what do you need to support and help you through that? So, for example, if you've had, if experienced trauma in your life, you need a provider that's trauma-informed. If you are a people pleaser, you need to figure out how to strengthen yourself to be able to speak up. And here we are, you, Mimi, and I, giving everybody who's listening permission to say no, permission to ask the doctor if they can call that doctor by their name instead of Dr. So-and-so. Because back to the hierarchy, midwives are Mimi. You're not midwife Niles, you're Mimi. And the nurses, they're Karen. Like, that shows you the structure of the power.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, you know, not to be super crass here, but this person's going to have their hand in your vagina. You know, like the most intimate thing is going to happen in a way that demand, like you get to make, you give consent. And I think that is a phrase that you need to wire into yourself. You don't have my consent. Say that and learn that. Look in the mirror and practice it, and, you know, whatever kind of technique, write it down 25 times every day. You have my consent. You don't have my consent, you know, because that's the language of the hospital, is about consent. And we are seeing more and more experience of people who are having non-consented care. You know, what the hospital calls refusal of care is actually people telling you, I don't give you my consent. You don't, this basically means you don't have my permission to do this, you know, and it can be small. It can be like releasing the membranes, and you say, you don't have my consent unless, you know, you want to have a really good conversation with me about why this might be needed, or why this might be beneficial to the labor and birth of my child. Like, you don't just get to do it and pop and, oh, your water, you know, I released your waters. No, that's not how this works, you know. Or so get that part of your vocabulary going. And again, absolutely, Adriana, you have my permission, and you have my support, and you have my, all the generations of Indian women behind me telling you, you can do this. And this is, it's your body and it's your choice. And you have autonomy, because there are people who don't have that, right? I mean, that's happening right now in this country, with people their wombs were taken away from them without them knowing. You know, that is the extreme
it of is what horrendous. Could happen.
But it horrendous. Happens on the micro level to us. On the potential of it happens on a micro level of every care episode, of every care experience, because of the power dynamic. Exactly what Adriana is saying. It's the power dynamic that allows it to happen. And again, if they're going to treat you like a customer, if they're going to treat you like a bottom line, then you treat them like they're giving you a service. You know, I mean, if that's what it demands, even in the public system.
Yeah. And we also know that when you're giving birth, you're in a more vulnerable state. So even make sure you bring in somebody. Bring in, as a doula, I have witnessed the room change and what is being said when I walk in. And that's horrible to say because it shouldn't be. But it does. So, and it doesn't have to be a doula. It can be, you know, your partner, you're a family member, a friend. But arm yourself with numbers, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's hard in COVID, I know, because places are limiting the amount of folks. And I suspect in the fall, if we have a surge, we might see some more of those types of things. I also tell people to choose wisely who you bring. And I want to say something to, you know, you said it's a very vulnerable time, but it's a weird thing because it's very vulnerable, but probably some of the most power that you'll ever experience in yourself. So it's both these things where you feel super raw because you almost have to have this kind of, to eject a human being from your body is super, you're literally very vulnerable, but you're also in one of the most physically powerful, I would say spiritually powerful places that you could be. So I think it's a both and. It's not an either or.
Agreed.
It's like, it's not like falling in love, but I tell people it's that feeling of falling in love where you know, when you meet someone and you're like, they're so cool, you know, like I really like them. I don't know why, but you know, I just like, I think I could vibe with them. And that's about intuition too, I think, which is another part of our sacred selves that we've really kind of squashed and numbed and kind of distrusted, especially I think people who identify as women have been told that's not a legitimate form of knowledge. So don't do that, right? I know I was told that. I have very strong intuition, but was told, like, where's the evidence for that? I grew up with scientists in my home. Like, what's the evidence for that feeling that you have? And the world will do that to you. And it's really, if you have a strong intuition, like, grow it, build it, because you're going to need it as a parent too.
And your intuition is also heightened.
Yeah.
During that pregnancy and birth state. Because to me, so the tagline for the podcast is inform your intuition. Ah.
Perfect.
And so
and you didn't
we're
tell
all
me to
about,
say that, so.
No, I did not. It's inform your intuition because to me, intuition is other ways of knowing, is ways of knowing that aren't centered around your thinking brain. But all of those other parts of you are as powerful as that thinking brain. We just don't give it as much, you know, stage presence.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that our culture is designed to really delegitimize it.
So I always ask, if you had to pick one thing that people need to do for themselves, what would that be?
I do think that it is our collective responsibility as childbearing people in the United States to learn the history of childbearing in the United States and what the medical system, the experimentation and the violence that was done on enslaved women, and how that's the roots of, those are the roots of modern gynecology and obstetrics. And, you know, I couldn't have said that 2 years ago without fear of offending physicians or the obstetricians that I love and adore and I work with and respect and admire. Not to scare you, because that knowledge shouldn't, information and knowledge and history should not be used for fear. It should be used to empower you to understand the roots of a system that does not protect your autonomy and does not treat you as a sovereign person, right? Who gets to make decisions about themselves. And so I would say, like, reacclimate yourself of childbearing as actually being a site and a location for, like, feminist principles? Like, how do you enact feminist principles in your healthcare? Because now I feel like it's cool to be a feminist, but it's so much more than a t-shirt. It's about in any time you engage with a system, can you look and analyze that system and demand that system to treat you like a whole, full human being? So that's what I would want for people to do, is really learn about what that the history is of this in this country, because it is violent and upsetting and so deeply disturbing. It will also help you understand what the experience is for Black women and Black femmes and Black childbearing people in this country. It's really something to understand and develop deep sort of fierce compassion around that.
If people want to follow what you're doing or see your research or get in contact with you, how can they do that? Can they do that?
Yes. I like to think of myself as active on Twitter, although it sort of ebbs and flows depending on how much sort of political junk is trending. But I have a pretty active Twitter feed. It's at @me_Niles. That's my Twitter feed. And I welcome engagement on there. And the other thing I would tell people too is like, stay curious in the work, because, you know, pregnancy is one thing, but so is parenting. And to me, this is all a continuum. You know, I feel like some of the first decisions I had to make as a parent was who my provider was and how I was going to labor and birth. Those are decisions that you make for your child, you know, so start thinking of it that way. Decisions that you're making for the health of your child and you're not just your own, and that people should know that labor and pregnancy and birth and parenting, it's a dance, it's a dyad. Like, you're in it with somebody else, right? Even if there's nobody else in that labor room with you, there is another human being who's waiting for your support and your guidance through the world.
Mimi, thank you so, so much for this fun, fabulous talk.
Yeah, thank you so much, Adriana. And I really appreciate being invited on. Power to the people.
That was Dr. Mimi Niles. She's the only appointed midwife to sit on the New York City Maternal Mortality and Morbidity Review Committee. And she also serves on the board of directors of the National Association of Certified Professional Midwives and the New York Birth Center Association. You can find her on Twitter at @me_Niles. That's @me_Niles. If you want to learn more about the different birth models and how they affect your birth, I've linked in the show notes a previous Birthful episode with Robbie Davis Floyd, as well as the All About Midwives episode with Missy Cheney. I hope your main takeaway for our conversation with Mimi Niles is that it is vital for you to understand the context and nuances of the system where you will give birth, so you can use your consumer voice to speak up and demand that the system treat you as a full human being. One thing you can do for yourself is to learn the history of childbearing in the United States. To that end, Dr. Mimi suggested a few books. They are Medical Apartheid by Harriet Washington, Killing the Black Body by Dorothy Roberts, and Medical Bondage by Dietrich Cooper Owens. The one thing that you can do for the rest of us is go to marchformoms.org and watch the congressional briefing that took place a few weeks ago about how changes to healthcare policy could address maternal health inequities. These include passing the Black Maternal Health Momnibus, which is made up of 9 different bills already filed in the current Congress. At marchformoms.org, you will find several ways you can take action today to help advance these new policies. Birthful was created by me, Adriana Lozada, and is a production of La Antigua Williams & Co. The show's senior producer is Paulina Velasco. Virginia Lora is the managing producer. Cedric Wilson is our lead producer. Thank you for listening and sharing Birthful. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, and everywhere you listen. Come back next week for more ways to inform your intuition.